You have 8 seconds. Make them count. That's what he was referencing on my website. And what I like so much about these kinds of events is that so many times we know we have sort of a legacy thinking about printing and what it can do, or how to produce something, or how not to produce something, or what's possible, or what's not. And when we come together like this and you see different people and different vendors and you talk about different shared practices, you can learn so many things about what is possible and what you can produce. And what we'll talk about today are some packaging innovations. And when to begin with, I want to start with three assumptions. So the first assumption is that for brands, packaging is the most powerful touch point we have. And here's why. Packaging is multi-sensory, so we can see it and we can feel it, and it's why the Scodex is so powerful and engaging. It's why GPA has got different things, or other substrates in Igosyn and so on. It's because it's very tactile, and that's multi-sensory. When it's, say, when SunChips came out with their new package, remember, it was, they had to take it back because it was too loud. It was sustainable and it was too loud, so people didn't like it. So it's multi-sensory. And then what happens with that, because it's so multi-sensory and the way our brains work, it's emotional. And so we have a really nice set of memories that we build with that, that we're not even conscious of doing, because we have an emotional response to a package. And it could be the way it feels, it could be the way that we remember it. But additionally, different than, say, when we're flipping through a phone, where you can flip through and see probably quickly 30, 40 emails in one pass and not even open them because you don't even spend a second on them anymore. You don't necessarily remember where you were, but on a package, if you think about, say, if we said, okay, I had to buy cereal for my kids 2 weeks ago, I might remember the mood we were in. I might remember what mood they were in. I might remember what the store was like. Was it 5 o'clock? Was I sweaty after yoga? Whatever it was, but there's a memory that happens, and it's another reason why packaging is so important. Another reason that packaging is so powerful is that now it's omni-channel. So it lives within a multitude of campaign, but also it's can connect to electronic devices. So at this point with packaging, we can actually put things on it, some covert marks, some overt marks, different things on it to connect to our digital world, because so much of our world is within the digital space. And we don't want to give that up. And so there's this pendulum swing of print and electronic and so on. But packaging can bridge that gap. Now, to me, the most important reason why packaging is so powerful is what I call omnipresent. And today, we're used to buying packaging on the shelf, and it's on the retail shelf. Today, it's about, say, 60%. Say, from here over is bought in retail, but from here to here is bought online. So, which means that even before, I could buy it on the shelf, but I'm experiencing it at home. But if it's the first time that I've encountered the package, when it comes to my house, either direct to consumer from that brand or from Amazon, then it needs to be a good experience, because that's the first time I've encountered that package. So it has to be a really good, memorable experience for all of those reasons. Second assumption that I want to go from as I put this together is that today, when we think about packaging, similar to what Stefan said, we're talking about very large production runs, because that's our mindset. Okay, so this is the thought process that we have, is that you make a package and you can make 1,000, you can make 5,000, you can make 50,000, you can make 500,000 into the millions. And because of that process, we think about packaging in a very stagnant way, that this is the design and we're done. And if any of you are designers, which many of you are, when we first started designing websites, we didn't think of that as stagnant. It was go ahead and get it up, because it's fluid. I can change the copy later on tonight. I can do it tomorrow. Whatever it is, it's fluid. And it's a new mindset that we want to start to cultivate about packaging with all the new innovations. The third assumption is that large brands have the advantage of scale. They're really good and excellent at getting their product all over the world, all over the United States, throughout North America, wherever their footprint is, they're very good at it. They've got great logistics, they've got supply chains, they have distribution channels, they have inventory systems, they have all these things that have been so advantageous for them to be able to grow. The corollary to that is that smaller brands and the disruption that startups have had is that they're much more agile. They're leaner, they're smarter, but they don't have the advantage of scale. Those that we've seen that have been the most disruptive have been able to conquer, have been agile, because that's where they started, and have been able to conquer scale. So those are the disruptors like, say, Dollar Shave Club, that grew to $2 billion and sold to Unilever for $2 billion, or Casper mattress, right? It's a durable good, and who would think that you could get a mattress in your home, but 365-day return is compelling, and they've been able to scale it. So with those three assumptions, if brands, and we've got our most powerful touch point is packaging, if brands don't start thinking about their packaging in a much more agile way, consumer engagement will start to decline, brand loyalty will go down, and market share will also decrease. And here's why. Sometimes we're already seeing some of that. So this is just a quick slide, and I want to dwell on it because I think all of us are aware of all the different bankruptcies, and that's what this is focused on, between the Limited and Toys R Us and Radio Shack. And then the irony of this bottom row of Sears and Amazon is that you've got Sears, which is the original catalog company, 125 years old, had enormous scale. They are almost out of business because of an online catalog company that has enormous scale because they're being put out of business by Amazon. What's also happening in this age of disruption is that with all of the information that's coming at us all of the time, the digital things and so on, we are our attention span has dropped. So for anyone that's ever designed billboards, the rule of thumb when I first started in design was 6 seconds, because that's how fast we were going on the highway. Well, now 8 seconds is the average attention span that we have as consumers. And to put it further into perspective, a goldfish has the attention span of 9 seconds. So our attention span keeps going down. So because of the idea of scale and this old mindset, there's this idea that most of us grew up with, that the bigger wins, right? Big eats the small. And if you're big, you're gonna conquer. So it's this, we all saw it probably in late 80s or mid 80s when Walmart would go into a small town, and within 4 or 5 years, the mom and pop shops were closing because that was big eating the small. That's what they did. That's how it worked. But today's paradigm has shifted. It's now the fast eating the slow. And that's where the agility comes in, because if you can turn, if you can do things that are more innovative, that are more different to connect to consumers, then that's how you're starting to win these days, in order to connect to those consumers. And so what if we as designers could do something to really affect that agility? Because if you're seeing brands decline, if you're seeing consumer engagement decline, and you're seeing brand loyalty go down, what if there's things that we can do, which is really exciting, to have a huge impact? And there are a lot of things that we can do to have that kind of impact. And I put these into two buckets. Over here, I call this the bottom line bucket. So these are all things that we can do to start to affect the bottom line. These are cost efficiencies. Okay, those are things that we can do with our packaging that actually impact businesses. Then over here, I've got some top-line strategies that I employ and strategize with brands on that actually help grow sales. So you've got this bottom thing going on here that's helping cost efficiencies, and then you have something going on at the top that's helping to grow and build sales. So let's talk about some of these techniques. So some of the bottom line techniques are a lot of what Stefan is talking about in terms of very short run. And the reason that short run is relevant for these brands is the prototyping. So today, we can prototype over and over and over until we get a product ready for market. And what that translates to for a business is that when it used to take, say, 180 days to get to market, I can now do it in 60 days. Because every time, I can prototype and I can get it going. What it also does, it allows brands to A/B test. So if I have flavors of candy, and I've got kiwi and I've got pomegranate, whatever that is, now I can test those in the market. And I'll show you some examples of what I mean by that and how that works. You can also do pilot programs. Short Run also comes in helping very small brands, because there used to be a time when you needed a minimum order quantity, and all of a sudden you had to get 50,000 units. Maybe you had to get them from China or wherever, and you had to build some things and buy the dyes and buy the plates, and all of a sudden it's not viable to actually spend that amount of money to get to market. But today, because of what we can do online, I know plenty of people, they can, you know, if they're making candles in their garage, whatever, they can make a brand, they can build a website, now they can make a package, they can make a label, they can make a carton, they can get to market with very little capital, which allows many more brands to get to market, and that's very important. Now, what happens with that, when that comes together, we're talking about speed to market, which is really important to brands and to companies in terms of bottom line, and then you're also talking about new product introductions. The third technique is when we start talking about, and this is where I like to get people in the room from operations and finance, because now the innovations that we can do start to affect cash flow. Because if we can print on demand and we can change the logistics of how something gets to that consumer, to that place, and I don't need to actually print a million of them if I'm going to do small different campaigns, then all of a sudden cash flow starts to change. And EBITDA numbers could be affected. And when you start talking about big companies, they're all looking at EBITDA numbers. So when that starts to happen, then I want those people in the room as well, when we start to have those kinds of conversations. That's really important also for bottom line changes. And then the last technique starts to affect bottom line, because you're talking about ways that you can help packagers and help brands to combat counterfeiting and diversion. So that's an example of where you need something authenticated. And there's things that we can do to the package, I mean, even just the tactile effect of a Scotix, or maybe there's some kind of sleeking thing or something that happens on a package, and all of a sudden it's a one-off and it can be authenticated. Or there can be a covert mark that you print on it that runs through the supply chain, and maybe the consumer doesn't even know it's there, but if it gets diverted and if it's sold on eBay, all of a sudden now I can see where it got diverted, because I've tracked it along the way in my supply chain. So here's just a couple quick little examples of that. So this is a jelly bean that I designed. This is an example of coming to market with a full collection, where you can print something all in line at one time that's very feasible, because with candy, similar to paper, so anybody who prints paper knows that the bulk, the bread and butter of their revenue comes from white, but they've got to have the black and the red and the blue and the green and so on to have a full collection. Well, it's very similar with a lot of the products that we purchase. In this case, cherry, 80% of what people eat is cherry. But it's not a full collection without the blackberry and the kiwi and the pomegranate and the grape and all the other colors. Because there are people, sometimes you want a little variety. It was similar on this cosmetic carton. And so that was the different colors of trying to do that. So now I want to switch over to some top line ideas. So some top line, and I've got some more examples of that too. So some top line ideas are things that you can do to engage the consumer, to increase consumer engagement, to build brand loyalty, and to drive purchase intent. And the ways that you can do that, one of them is through haptics. Haptics is the idea that there is a tactile feel to something that's very important. And you do that through the shape, you do that through the feel, you can do it through the substrate, you can do it through the die cutting, through digital laser die cutting. And all these things now, because of digital capabilities, are able to do on those bottom line ideas. that I mentioned over there. So they can be done in a short run. They can be done in the prototyping because that's all part of it. The other thing that we can do is we can add that same digital engagement feature that I talked about in security. There's also a front-facing, top-line, consumer-facing aspect to that. So if I can take that packaging and I can connect a coupon or connect a promotional piece or connect an event to a package, and all of a sudden my worlds start to collide, conversion goes up. And the third thing that I want to talk about is versioning. And versioning is the idea that you have this idea of mass production, a million of a carton, but now we have the ability to do various versions of that, and I'll go through what that means, to get all the way to a very personalized version, but to 100,000 people of personalized versions. So with the haptics and the idea of tactile and why that's so important to the memory is the endowment effect. What happens with the endowment effect is that we have our mind, it's a very primal response that our mind gives, and it's a response that we own it. So if we touch it, it almost feels like it's ours, and even our imagination can trigger that. But it's not only that we want to take it home, it's also that we give it a higher perceived value. So if it's mine, I think it's, if this remote is mine, I actually think it's more valuable than if it's Brett's, because it's his, but it's mine. So I actually think it's worth way more than if he were going to try to sell it to me. That's the endowment effect. And it's really important because once we touch a package, so when we're talking in packaging, if we can entice someone at the retail shelf, or we're enticed in the at home when it's received, and once they pick it up, you're 50% more likely to take it home. So adding a really great substrate, adding some embellishments to it, adding some digital die cutting to it, all of a sudden, if we can do that and get somebody to pick it up, you're halfway there. And that's what we want. We're trying to grow top line. So this is just a quick example, and you can't see it so well on this slide, but there were some embellishments going on here and also some die cutting. I'm going to move on because that one you can't see as well. This is an example that I pitched to Coppertone about digital engagement. When the salesperson came to me and said, hey, we're talking to Coppertone, and I told them we could add some embellishments because what Coppertone wanted was increased repeat sales. So he was talking about enticing, which is great stuff, but I researched it and I said to them, but really, to increase repeat sales on something like suntan lotion, when we look at the habits of how people use it, they put it on when you go to the pool or you go to the beach in the morning, you put it on, and then you never reapply. So what if we could add a reminder feature to the package to get them to reapply? This is actually video, so it's just about 20 seconds. Oh, there's sound, but there's no sound. But what's happening is, if you put that feature on, and then you set your phone to it, and you set the reminder, then all of a sudden the 2 hours goes by, and your phone rings, and it reminds you to reapply. So that feature can be built into the package so that they're connecting. So now that package is memorable. I've increased the consumer engagement. I'm building up some loyalty. And I'm certainly influencing purchase intent, because if the bottle gets emptier faster, it has to be rebought. So it's repeat sales. So the reason that connecting with consumers is so critical is that today 64% of consumers say that the experience has the biggest impact on their brand loyalty is a good consumer experience. And their package can be a great, beautiful, wonderful, memorable experience. And in fact, today 20% of millennials expect a customized experience. So when we start talking about consumer engagement and building brand loyalty and the agility that we're talking about, we've got to be agile to make those connections to people, because if we think about the amount of information that companies have on us. A lot of it's declared data, not the weird Cambridge Analytica stuff, but some declared data. And you think about the way, even when, you know, now it's old hat, right? So I pull up Amazon, and if my Amazon homepage looks completely different than yours or than yours, because they're tracking what I'm doing, okay? So we're expecting that if my information's there, then connect with us. Now, there's a fine line between connecting and creepiness, right? And so we always have to sort of figure that out, because it's creepy, right? And the way to connect to consumers more in-depthly is through what I call versioning. So I'm going to start here. And this is the idea of mass production. And so Stefan had said 1,000 units. I sort of put that at anything over, say, 50,000 units, okay? Mass production. The next step of that, as you get into this idea of versioning, and it's going to go across the spectrum all the way down to personalization, the next step of that is what I call random versioning. Random versioning is when you can do versions to make it more engaging on the shelf, but you don't necessarily know which one is going to connect with the consumer. So we see this a lot when, say, a movie comes out, and let's say it's the new, I don't know, Avengers movie, and you've got Iron Man, and you've got Hulk, and you've got, I don't know, whoever the Scarlett Johansson one is, the different ones. And you see that on the tubs, or you see it on the cartons, and you don't know which you're going to connect, but you connected to it because you went to the movie and you're connecting with those characters. That's random versioning. As we go down, so we're going to drill down into more specifics. This is variable versioning. Variable versioning is when we do something and we actually know what might connect with the consumer. So the Coke campaign with the names, that's actually variable versioning. It wasn't personalized, it's actually variable. So there were studies that they looked at in various parts of the country to know which names are more popular and which aren't, and so on like that. In this case, we see this a lot with sports. So you see it with, say, Tostitos. I think Doritos has done it. But you can do it, say, with craft beer. So sometimes if a company or brand wants to connect better with the consumer or feel more engaged in the community, they can connect on something that relates to them, right? It could be something seasonal. Seasonal, I think I would probably put back here with the random versioning. So sometimes you'll see seasonal items, maybe a seasonal cosmetic. And let's say it's Christmas time, and there might be one with a snowflake, and there might be one that's a little red, and there might be one that's a little silvery blue, and there's different ones. You don't necessarily know which ones are going to hit, but it all brings out that idea of versioning and connection. When we take that even further, so we're getting even further into consumer connection and consumer engagement, we get into one-of-a-kind versioning. This is the idea where you could take something. In this case, I did a pattern. You can take a pattern and create something so that it's a one-of-a-kind piece just for you. And the reason that that's important in campaigns is when you do that, it makes me feel very special as a consumer. But not just that. When it connects to the omni-channel campaign, there might be other swag that I could buy, or there might be another piece that I can get, or something else that I can do in order to connect that's just mine, that's unique to me. And that is a great way to increase some brand loyalty and consumer engagement and drive purchase intent. And then when we take that all the way over here, we get to personalized. And that's where we actually know who our consumer is, and so we can personalize it. We can put a photo, we can put a picture, whatever it is, and to connect to them one-on-one. And this is going to become more and more popular as more brands sell direct to consumer, because they actually know who that consumer is. And I'll show you a few examples. So this is an example of versioning through affinity groups. So this would be variable versioning. So this was a company that started online, and they were moving onto the retail shelf, but they were mostly focused on bodybuilding community. But in order to go into retail, they had this very scientific label, and we didn't want to redesign their whole label because that's always offensive when you go in and say that first. So we said, let's try to connect with your consumers, the various consumers that will walk into that store, because they were going to put them in, say, a GNC or a Whole Foods, wherever. Let's try to connect to the consumer on the shelf so that if, say, my son, he plays varsity basketball. if he's had a lot of practice that week and coach says, hey, you guys need some extra bulking or whatever it is that you need, he might connect to the one that's basketball, or somebody in track might connect to someone in track. And then what happens, because of these bottom line things, then you can start to track which ones have more sales, which now you're collecting data as well, which is really critical. So this next example is an idea of customized versioning, where each one was different and it was one of a kind, but not the typical what we think of. So Sam Adams is the original craft brew. But for people under about 35, don't think of them as a craft brewery, because they were, by the time they could drink, they were national. But they've really helped a lot of craft breweries. So they wanted to know, how could they connect to their millennial customers, those consumers, and show that they still, and get credit for the craft brew that they are. So we did some different things and embellishments, and we changed the shape of the label and put a deckled edge and so on. But the part here that's so relevant is that number, that batch number, because now I can batch number them, and I can have every number different, which gives the feel that this is a special batch, this is different, and those are customized. And this is another version of that, another version of versioning, of that one of a kind. And this was a pitch to Cheerios. And so the way that this campaign goes is that you could change the Cheerios carton on every single carton and have every single one unique, which does a couple of things. If you're at the retail shelf, you're actually standing there longer, because you may not know which one to get. If it's a child's artwork, let's say you connect this campaign to some campaign that starts, say, in July before school starts, and you're going to support art and arts in the schools. If you're going to do that, then you could run it some kind of contest where you could put children's artwork within this. And if you do that, then the person whose artwork it is keeps it, right? And then you can also create a direct-to-consumer model, so that if yours isn't chosen to be on the shelf, then you could actually order your own child's custom Cheerios carton. What happens then in terms of consumer engagement and brand loyalty and purchase intent? You've already increased purchase intent on the shelf, because if I'm standing there longer and I can't decide, I'm probably going to get both of them. But what's also happened is you're cultivating your brand loyalty, because the parent who purchases it is purchasing it, but if it's the child's artwork, it lives probably on a shelf, and now you're cultivating brand loyalty in subsequent generations. And then this last example I want to show on versioning is a personalized versioning. So does anyone in here know the top reason that people buy aspirin? That's right, it's heart health. And Bayer packages their aspirin in a 265 unit bottle. So we said, well, how about if you package it in a 30-day supply? And now you get them to subscribe. So you get someone to subscribe. And here's what happens. You know that they're going to take aspirin every single day, so you're in front of them at least once a day. But you've got information on them because they subscribe to you. So you can beta test them. You can send them other PIL, other patient information literature. You can put her name on the label. You could change that out each time, and it's not even last minute. You know it's coming because it's a subscription. And then what you can also do is link it, put a digital engagement feature on it. So we put a digital engagement feature on it, linked it to the phone. So now you're not in front of her once a day, you're in front of her twice a day, because she's getting a reminder at 5 o'clock or whatever time it's taken, you know, 7 a.m. did you take your aspirin? That's what happens. So that's just to show the different strategies that you can do on a package. All the way over here, you've got mass production. It doesn't mean that everything has to be personalized. There's all these steps along the way to increase the consumer engagement, and to build brand loyalty, and to drive purchase intent. So this last example that I want to show takes a lot of these top line strategies and techniques and then matches them with some of the bottom line techniques. And that's why I show this one last, because I've already gone through this. And this is really interesting. Pizza Hut was a pitch that we did where Pizza Hut's problem was very long time period between same-store sales. So their same-store sales period was 13 weeks. And 13 weeks for pizza is terrible, because when you think about all the times we get pizza, it's a game, it's parents' night out, it's, oh, I'm too tired on my way home from work, whatever that is. 13 weeks means that customer's only coming in four times a year. So we put together a program of promotions, and here's where all of these innovations start to collide, because you've got some bottom line things happening and some top line things happening. So the first thing we did is we said, well, let's do some random versioning, because we don't know what promotions are going to hit in what regions or what cities or what stores in the country. Okay, so we did some random versioning. We also suggested not printing millions of these, but send a supply that will last a period of time in that store, because you're going to gather data from what sells. Then you can, of those random things that are in there, it was very, one of the sort of parameters was it had to be easy for the team member to put it on, which is another reason why they're random in the box, but it's also a random version of labels. So then, what we also did is we serialized each one and we put a digital engagement feature, because now we're going to start to collect data. So once they're serialized, it could connect with the app. So how many times have you gone to the store and you forget your coupon and you've got your buy one, get one, or you've got $2 off and you forgot it and you can't use it? But if it's on your phone already, now you can use it. Once it's registered on the phone, now you can remind them. If it hasn't been used, if there's an expiration, you can remind them. Can link it to gift cards. There's a range of things that you can do. So that's another top line. But when we get into bottom line, we get into A/B testing. So if we know, let's say in New York, the buy one large, get one free does better, but in Dallas, it's the garlic knots does better. Then in the reorder, you take that data and you keep that one that's so very popular, and you can start to A/B test others to see if those also get the conversion that the previous get. So because we're not printing so many at once, we're saving on inventory and we don't have waste, which also goes on other products that are seasonal. It has to do with shelf, you know, lift and so on. But now we've collected all of this data. We've connected to the phone. We've done the random versioning. But this is an example of something where we've connected all of these techniques that make sense to the brand to do. But it's also design that's impacting the top line numbers and also the bottom line. And it's a very powerful conversation when you start to put bottom line ideas, bottom line strategies with these top line strategies. You start to create the agility that brands need to survive in this new paradigm of the fast eating the slow. When that happens to us as designers, it makes us much more powerful in the room. It makes what we do much more powerful to the brand. It brings us to a higher seat at the table, because now we're having strategic business conversations in addition to the aesthetics, which we haven't even talked about today, in addition to all of the aesthetics that we can add to a package. To be able to have these kinds of business conversations is just growth all the way around, personally, professionally, and for the brand as well. And so what I want to leave you with are just a couple of the resources so that you can learn a little bit more in-depthly about some of the things I talked about. So clearly, GSB Digital is a resource for all of these innovations. The haptics, if you want to learn more about the haptics and the power of that, there's this great book called Neuroscience of Touch that talks about the science behind that. There's also, the guy's name is Eagleman. He's got a video series on it. And then this idea of scale and agility is a great book that David Butler wrote, and he was at Coca-Cola, created that freestyle, that Coke freestyle machine where you can get 100 different flavors, and he wrote a book on scale and agility. So, any questions? Yeah.
More important than an old established brand like Tiffany, for example, who, when a woman is going to get engaged and her spouse-to-be comes in with a Tiffany little box, her eyes get big and they glow and she thinks, does that work still?
Oh, yeah, because that's brand equity. And ask any of the women in here, I'm sure it does. But that's brand equity. That's why that brand is so valuable. So it would take a lot for that brand to go away. But they can't ride on their scalability. You can't always ride on that. The other thing that's interesting about Tiffany that you say, when we start looking at the data on the retail upheaval that's happening, Deloitte did a really interesting study, because what they were seeing was that there were some brands going out of business and going bankrupt. But when they started to look at income levels and other things that were happening, income levels were starting to go up. Well, here's what the study showed. It showed that luxury goods are doing fine. There's growth in luxury goods, and there's growth in necessity goods, and Tiffany's a luxury good. And the reason that that's happening is because when they saw income values growing, cost of living was actually growing higher. So, which is where we read in the news all the time about the income gap, which would mean luxury goods can go up because there's an income gap, but necessity goods, so that's why I think it's Dollar General stock is way up right now because of necessity goods are up. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.